You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500.
The amazing Kate Casey.
Welcome back to another week's episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope you guys are having a great week. I'd like to start off by addressing The Bachelor. Now, I'm not sure if this guy Ari is as successful as they're making him out to seem. I know that with each season, they make it seem like he's the most successful, most attractive, comes from a great family, great group of friends, absolutely looking for a potential wife, but I'm starting to question it. Okay, so this episode, it's the second date. He has two one-on-one dates in one episode, which is unusual. And he takes this girl, Crystal, who has no relationship with her parents and has a homeless brother, back to Scottsdale, Arizona, where he lives to meet his family. But before they go to meet his family, number one, they go to Pizza Hut to see where he used to work, and then a tour of his high school. And you've come to find out he left high school to become a race car driver. So I don't know if he ever got a college education at all. Then they go back to his house. His house is like this very sad townhouse on some corner in Scottsdale. And I know he sells real estate, but it was just like a sad townhouse. It was like a lot of leather furniture and a lot of decor done in like various shades of beige. And then his closet is filled with his helmets that he probably doesn't wear anymore. And in the back of his closet, he keeps this weird photo album from his mother, a collection of his childhood photos, which he makes this girl pour through, which is so gross and embarrassing. And then makes her sit on his uncomfortable couch, and she has to sit through video after video of him running around as a child. Okay, she barely knows you, weirdo. She doesn't want to come back to your weird townhouse in Scottsdale, look through all these dumb videos, especially when she's watching them, reminding herself how she basically has no family and that no one loved her and that the only gift she ever bought or got for herself at Christmas was a comforter. And then they go to meet his parents. His parents are like, you know, we've been married forever. And she's asking these pointed questions to the father, like, well, obviously it's not all rainbows. It must have been hard for you at some points. And he looks at her and he gives her this very earnest look and says, well, yeah, I mean, sometimes it gets painful. And then you're like, yeah, you're living in the present. Does your son Ari really know what he's signing up for? So I thought that was a jerk move to take the girl who has no family to meet his family. I just feel like she barely knows you. Why does she want to meet your parents? Then later in the episode, they have this stupid group date with 20 girls, and they go to a demolition derby. No woman wants to do that. There's nothing sexy about driving a car. It's basically a reason for Ari to show off that he can drive a car around the track. You know what? I gotta tell you something. I don't give two shits about cars, and I don't care if you can drive fast. I care, can you do you have a retirement account? Are you going to be able to afford all the children that I want to have? Like, I don't give two shits about your car. So this one girl has a total panic attack and says that she was in the bumper cars at an amusement park as a child, and it infected her so deeply that she is unable to drive a demolition derby car. And I thought to myself, you sound like a complete nutbag. The same thing happened to me as a kid and I got over it. And then I realized she's sort of genius because she gets this like one-on-one time and he's like empathetic, because then she gets into the derby ring or whatever and she starts to like pummel people with their cars. So I guess, you know, she made herself known. Also, I want to point out these girls are such ding-dongs because they all get upset with the bachelor, or not the bachelor, but the girl that will interrupt them when they're with the bachelor and say, you know, how could you interrupt my time? Because basically they've got like 4-minute slots where they can just talk to him about their hopes and dreams. I think these girls are all playing it wrong. I say, if a girl comes in and says, do you mind if I interrupt? You say, yeah, I do. We were just getting to the nitty gritty about my hopes and dreams, and I have yet to find out if he, you know, the age that he lost his virginity. So yeah, you're going to need to tap out for a minute. You got it? And the other thing is, no one's playing enough mental games. I would be playing so many mental games. This is the trick, girls. If you're a contestant or a potential contestant, this is what you do. You find out information on all these girls. You ask a lot of questions. You put it into your suitcase. You just, you know, figure out their triggers. Then you use it later in the game. So Crystal's pissing you off. Drop hints in the kitchen. Gosh, I'm so hungry right now, but I feel so bad. I mean, I want to eat, but then I'm thinking about your brother who's homeless on the streets with the singed hair, and that must be tugging at your heartstrings right now. You must really want to be with him right now. She's going to leave the show. She's not going to want to stay on a television show when she's thinking about her brother who's homeless in the streets. You just pull out their childhood issues. It's not that hard. Next thing you know, they all drop like flies. There are three of you left. You're the one that has enough sex with the guy. He's going to choose you. You stay with him for 3 weeks or 4 weeks. You get your cover of Us Magazine. You get enough people following you on Twitter and Instagram. If that doesn't work out, it's fine. You want to be the runner-up. Then you get your spinoff. Then you get, you know, maximize like 8 more months of press. And then you can do whatever you want. It's not rocket science. The show's been on for 75 seasons. We all know how it works. Other stuff. Vanderpump Rules. I'm really disappointed in my Tom Schwartz. I have to tell you, as you know, I've interviewed him 2 times. I feel like he is an angel winged dove. He's such a sweet guy, but it's pretty apparent that he needs to dial it back on the alcohol. Listen, if you're in a bar in New York City and you have no recollection of making out with someone and calling them by your wife's name, it's probably time you put down the bottle of Jaeger and just, you know, ask yourself where it all went wrong. And then, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. I'm telling you, this Dorit, she's got 2 personalities and she went off the rails this episode. And I think you saw in the end that, you know, she's not as great as she is acting to be. And I'm really suspect of this lifestyle and I want some more information. I would like to do more deep diving on her family history. I'd like to go back with PK to Europe. I'd like to see what goes on there. Why isn't Boy George in episodes anymore? Is he still good friends with them? Could he talk to me? I would like to just like get some recap. And then finally, my kids have been watching the show on Animal Planet called Treehouse Masters. So basically, people would like a treehouse. And this isn't like, you know, a couple sticks in your, in, you know, built into your tree. This is like the most, it's basically like a 4-star hotel in one of your trees in your backyard. But the kicker is, they always show up at someone's house as if they have no idea this camera crew is coming. And they're like, you know, sitting in their tree swing. And the host will walk up and say, like, oh, crazy to see you here. Oh, my God, that's so weird. You're a host from Animal Planet in your backyard. That's so weird. And then he says, all right, well, these are our plans for your treehouse. And it just so happens the carpenters that are going to work on this in the next 24 hours are a group of people that you already know. Isn't that weird? We totally got access to people in your Rolodex. And they're going to build something that's so mammoth that you could probably sell it as a second property. I would never stay in any of these tree houses because I don't really like nature and I don't like a lot of wood paneling. It brings me back to my childhood, which again, somebody on The Bachelor could use to trigger me if I were a contestant, but I don't want to live in a place that has wood paneling and eat acorns. It's just not my deal, but you can watch that. Your kids will be into it. This week's episode is awesome. Teddy Mellencamp is the real new housewife of Beverly Hills cast member. Jerry Wykman is a dear friend of mine. I made him watch the show on A&E called Undercover High. Basically, these 7 adult plants spent a semester at a high school in Topeka, Kansas. And you kind of see what disasters lie at a typical American high school. And then finally, podcast favorite, my friend Steve Stoff, who's a real pisser. I made him watch Sister Wives. The show premiered again this week. If you haven't been watching, you should dial yourself back in because McKelty, which is one of their 85 children, she's getting married this season. She's been dating her boyfriend for like 4 months. So, of course, they're going to get married. And let's just say their wedding plans are the most bizarre production plans I've ever heard in my life. Forget the juice cleanse. 2018 is all about the closet cleanse. And you know why? The average woman only wears 20% of her closet on a regular basis. And you guys know that's true. Old jeans, that ugly bridesmaid's dress, that trend you only wore once, it's time to clean it out and make way for a totally new wardrobe. With Rent the Runway's unlimited membership, you can replace your old stuff with a rotating closet for one flat monthly price. That's it. You can shop less, spend less, and 4 out of every 5 unlimited members say they've actually saved money on clothes since they've joined. So you get the thrill of a constantly refreshing wardrobe without the commitment, closet space, or buyer's remorse. So here's how it works. Rent for designer pieces at a time. You choose what goes in your shipment, and no surprises here. Keep pieces as long as you want and swap at any time for new looks. Sign up today and you can get 30% off your first month. Rent the Runway will even throw in a closet cleanse kit with a donation bag and a prepaid shipping label. Let me tell you what I just got. I wore a Slate and Willow black faux leather legging to a party. I wore a Tory Burch Valentina tunic dress out to dinner with my husband. I've got these Free People sequin pants that looked so great with a black top, and I actually didn't look like I was homeless for once. So here's what I want you to do. Visit renttherunway.com/unlimited or download their iPhone app, which is totally easy. Enter the code REALITYLIFE at checkout to unlock the 30% off discount. And that's code REALITYLIFE at checkout. Sign up today and pledge to get dressed better in 2018. So what are you waiting for? I'm so excited to talk to Teddy Mellencamp because she's the new Real Housewife and Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. And everyone who knows me knows that I have seen almost every episode of every Real Housewives franchise. I consider myself basically a professor of Real Housewifery. And I'm delighted to see someone very normal on television. She's young, she's fresh, she has an opinion, and she's got a career, which are all great things. And so I'm delighted to talk to you. And we have a friend in common, which is even great. So welcome, Teddy.
Oh, hi. Well, thank you. I love that intro. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
And as I've told her, I almost asked her father to walk me down the aisle when I got married in Maui in 2007. And I regret that decision because I ended up actually, the person who was like our wedding organizer, she got me a microphone and I sang karaoke at my own wedding and I did sing some of his songs. So I do feel like it all came full circle.
That's amazing. I love that.
So one of the things I really wanted to ask you was about first I want to know how you joined the show, but I also wanted to know if you had seen any episodes of the show before.
So I had never seen the show prior. And I probably should have, but no, I had never seen the show prior. And the way I kind of got brought on to the show is because Dorit and I have a mutual friend in common and we all host these different Beat Buds classes. It's like a kids' music class. I'm sure you probably know what it is.
Yeah.
But we have them at all of our different houses and Jagger is the same age as Cruz. So she had come to one of those and that's kind of where we met. And that's where, I mean, you guys all see us meet at the exact same time that her and I met.
Oh, how funny. And then someone asked me if you know the What's Up app moms, because they were in the background of the party, too.
I do. I'm friends with Meg, and I actually did a video for them one time, just, you know, so she came and brought her son as well.
So funny. So you never watched an episode, which is so surprising. And I actually, it's a good question. I don't know if that helped or hindered. Did you, the first day of filming, did you think this is so outside of my norm, but I'm just going to roll with it?
I think when I first started filming, you know, the biggest learning curve for me was I have to be very present. You know, sometimes when you're running a business and you have your kids and you have all these things in your life, some moments you're not present. And that's something that I really need to work on in myself. And I see myself. And I mean, I think the audience can see it too. You can kind of see it in my face when I'm like trying to focus, you know, because you're having long, you know, you're going through, you know, whether it's drinks or meeting somebody, you're having long conversations and you have to stay focused. And that's a good lesson, whether you're on television or not. Listen to people talking to you.
How much of the time is spent hearing backstories? Because I know women, when you get into a group, there's always someone that's like, well, let me give you the background. I know that you're someone who has said on the show, you know, I'm just going to go into conversations with an open mind. Like, if everyone says that Lisa Rinna is crazy, that's fine, but I'm going to figure that out on my own. So how annoying is that as a new cast member, like having to listen to other people talk about their backstory?
I mean, I think the thing for me is, and what you kind of see with a big group of strong, opinionated women is not everybody's going to get along with who everybody else does. So somebody's opinion may be valid, but really has nothing to do with me and how it's going to make me feel.
Right.
Everybody is going to rub everybody a different way. You know, I may bother somebody and not bother another person. You know, it is what it is. So that's why when you get a backstory, if it doesn't pertain to you, it doesn't really help you in any way.
Yeah.
I do better with just feeling like a gut to somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and most of the time, you know, it's right.
So is it are the women on The Real Housewives, do they match the other women that you know in real like in actual in Beverly Hills or Beverly Hills adjacent? Like, are they as, you know, fancy as the other women? Are you relating on a day-to-day level with women that are as dressed up as they are?
I mean, I have friends all over the spectrum. Let's be honest. Like, I've always been one of the most casual of any of my friends just in general. I mean, but that being said, you know, whether the outside appearance or whatever it is that somebody's portraying or the way that somebody is really isn't how I judge a friend. You know, for me, it's like, what is it that we talk about? Can we laugh? Can we have fun together? So regardless if somebody's more done up or more casual, it's really in their personality, not in their aesthetics for me.
Did you feel like a pressure at all? Like, I've got to get new clothing. I have to blow my hair out every day during filming because, I mean, I'm somebody who wears workout clothes all the time, too.
I mean, let's be honest. I have like 14 strands of hair of my own. So the fact of having to deal with my hair situation has been a whole, you know, scenario. But, you know, I'm a baseball cap kind of girl. So, yes, I mean, when you're filming, you can't wear a ton of baseball caps because then people can't see your expressions. So that was a big wake up call for me. I'm like, what do you mean? I have to do an interview without my baseball cap? But other than that, yeah, I mean, I think you see throughout the season that I'm probably the most casual of the group, but it's also not what I'm into. I love, you know, I love to feel good and look nice, but I don't know what I'm doing. I'm like, you know, whatever. I'm just figuring it out, you know, but there's other things that I'm passionate about that other girls probably aren't interested in. So I love watching the other women's fashion. It's just not something I'm super into.
Well, I remember watching one Instagram story. It was like late at night and you were talking to your husband who was half asleep about how you really felt like you needed to up your game as far as lingerie. And he was like, I'm like so passed out. I don't even know what you're talking about. So do you feel now that you're on TV, well, like, oh God, now I have to dress up because I might run into somebody and they might, you know, want to talk to me?
I wish you could see my outfit right now and what I'm about to pick my kids up from school in. No, I am. I can't even. Like, the second I got done doing press this morning, like on camera, I took my makeup off, took my hair out. Like, I'm back to like in my sweats, like doing my business, you know, because all my business is over the phone. So I'm back in my comfy clothes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, definitely not. I am what I am.
Now, you're somebody like myself who's like very careful about what they eat. So the scene when you go to Dorit's house and she made the Moroccan dish, I know myself and I would have a panic attack. So I'm like, how do I explain to her? I cannot stand those spices and I hate to eat rice. So did you have that moment? Because I think all of America wondered the same thing.
I have to be honest. That dinner was delicious. I have absolutely no idea what it was, but it was so good. And, you know, like, of course I took notice of some things. Like, oh, she used brown rice. Awesome. But no, I, regardless of how disciplined I am, I'm going to give it a try, you know, like I'm going to be, you know, open-minded. And also I've planned for it. I know ahead of time that I'm going out on a double date,
right?
Then I'm going to be super good for breakfast and lunch so that I can enjoy dinner a little, you know, it's just about balance. And once I learn that, you know, it's okay.
So as far as the show goes, can you tell us who you felt like you bonded with the most? Maybe the person that you assumed that you would bond the most with and the person that you were surprised that you bonded with the most.
Well, I, not knowing anyone going into it, I didn't really have any expectations. I can say throughout, Lisa Vanderpump was constantly very kind to me and like checking in to make sure that I was okay. And, you know, she was very kind in that way. She could tell when I was like having a little bit of a hard time, and she'd always be like, are you okay? Checking in, like very kind. And I also think she's a great businesswoman, and I learned a lot from her. And, I have a lot of fun with Kyle Richards, like her and I, like we can honestly, it feels very natural with her, and it always was effortless, and that's always how I love my friendships to be.
That's great. And then what has been the most surprising thing that's come out of doing the show?
I think for me, I was expecting at the beginning, I think you can see a little bit, I'm very in my head, you know, because I'm a person that I'm very empathetic, but I also am direct. So there's that thin line when you meet new people where you're mm-hmm. yourself, but you're not in their face. And, you know, it's kind of taking a seat back. But I think for me, the biggest thing was just realizing, one, I make a lot of expressions when people are talking to me. I need to be aware of them and being present. And then, you know, the other thing for me that I realized is I had a lot more fun than I thought I was. And as soon as you'll see as the time progresses, as I get more comfortable, like I have some good times and I'm appreciative of that.
So one of the things that a lot of people wrote to me to say to you was that they really appreciated the fact that you were open about your fertility struggles. So now that that episode is aired, have you been overwhelmed with responses to that? Because it really touched quite a bit of people.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of women reached out, and to be perfectly honest, it's something I couldn't not share because it's such a huge part of our life. We're so blessed to have our son because of it. And my daughter was with insemination, but my son with IVF, and all the women out there that related to the same things that I was saying, know that it's okay. You're allowed to. And, you know, regardless, hard to share, it makes you feel really vulnerable. I mean, it's who I am, and it's a picture of my book. I couldn't be without.
And people wanted to know how you came up with the name Slate for your daughter.
I'll be honest. My dad and I had always kind of talked about the name, and we thought Slate was going to be a boy. So we had already picked Slate for my son. And then, my dad had suggested it. And then my husband and I fell in love with the name. And then we had planned to name our son that, but then Slate came and was a girl, and we were like, you know what? It's a cool girl's name. We're going to go with it. And
it's a great name. Great name.
Thank you. Thank you.
So what is the one thing you would like people to know about you?
The one thing I would like people to know. I think the most important thing that I can say is, whether it's the TV, whether it's the television show or my real life, I'm always 100% true to who I am. You'll see me have some struggles. You'll see me have some laughs, and all of it's organic to who I am. And there are true feelings that I have. And I never want to be somebody I'm not, and I'm never going to put on a show. And I think as long as I stand true to who I am, then I'm good to go. No matter what good or bad comes of each episode airing.
That's great. Well, I'm having a great time. I'm looking forward to the rest of the season. Tell everybody where they can find you.
Well, you can find me on Instagram at Teddy Mellencamp. I love an Insta story. Or my website is teddymellencamp.com. And if you're interested in any of the accountability coaching, I cannot respond to DMs. It's just not good business model for me. You have to go through the questionnaire on the website, and then you'll get the answers that you want.
That's great. Awesome. Well, maybe one of these days I'll drive to LA and we can do a workout class together.
We have to invite our mutual friend. We can all go.
That's a deal. You got it. It's a new year and you probably want a new body after all that gross food you ate over the holidays. Here's some great news. Beachbody On Demand is an online fitness streaming service that gives you unlimited access to a wide variety of highly effective, world-class workouts personalized to meet your needs. I'm somebody who works out 7 days a week. So what I love about Beachbody On Demand is not only does it include nutritional content all proven to help people achieve their health and fitness goals, but everything is right at your fingertips. So if you like P90X, 21-Day Fix, they've got a three-week yoga retreat. My favorite workout is something called A Little Obsessed. It's a series of five 30-minute workouts. So easy to do right at my house. And plus, the annual subscription to this is cheaper than a gym membership, so you'll have extra money to buy a new bikini that you can wear with your new body on a great tropical trip. So, this is what I want you to do. Right now, my listeners can get a free, F-R-E-E free, you heard it right, trial membership when you text Reality Life, that must be all one word, to 303030. You will get full access to this entire unbelievable platform for free. That means all the workouts and the nutritional information for free. Text Reality Life to 303030. As you know, I'm always looking for new shows, and I was really interested to see there was a new show about to air on A&E called Undercover High. It airs Tuesdays at 10 p.m. And at Highland Park High School in Topeka, Kansas, administrators have sent seven adults back to high school to gain unique access and perspectives on the issues facing teenagers today. So the seven adult plants are ranging from age 21 to 26, and they're going to spend a semester in the high school. So that's about 112 days. And as posing as typical students, the participants attend classes, make friends, and join clubs and activities. And they soon discover various challenges and complexities facing the students. This includes bullying and social media, academic pressure, and evolving social standards. So the seven adults, they include a former bully, victims of bullying, a teen mom, a youth motivational speaker, a set of siblings, and a teen ministers. You should know that they are all unaware of one another, so they don't know who the other plants are. And only school administrators and select members of the community know their true identities and the reason for their stay. So this, all of those teachers, the students, they are completely unaware of what's going on. They just know that cameras are there because they're under the assumption that the school district is doing some sort of docuseries on the high school. My guest today is a dear friend of mine. Dr. Jerry Weichman is a licensed psychologist and adolescent specialist. He's an author, a speaker, and a parenting expert. Housed in the prestigious Hoag Neuroscience Institute in Newport Beach, California, he's dedicated his career to enhancing adolescent skill development in academic, interpersonal, and interpersonal areas so that today's teens are so prepared for their adult lives. You should know that Dr. Jerry is a nationally recognized expert on teens and teen crisis issues, and through his public speaking and private practice, he provides relevant solutions to teens and parenting challenges. So his clients include both teens, and he also talks to parents throughout his speaking opportunities. So first of all, welcome, Jerry.
No, thank you very much for having me.
So I'm really interested in this show because I have little kids, as you also have little kids too, but I don't think it's, I've actually learned from you, it's never too early to learn about the social pressures facing kids, especially ones in middle school and high school. And what I like about this show is you're really confronted with the reality of what's going on in high school. When I started to watch the show, I was really appalled at how disrespectful students are and how prevalent their cell phone use is. And they said in the show that 88% of teens have access to cell phones and 89% of teens use social media. In your work, is this one of the most prevalent issues that you're facing with your patients, is that the social pressures, especially when it relates to social media?
Well, I'd say from the parents' perspective, yes, this is one of the bigger concerns that they have because they can see how detrimental this is to their kids, their lack of, emotional presence in the home, their procrastination and distraction from work and other activities and things that they need to be doing. But I think from the kids' perspective, they do feel, from the over 5,000 kids I've worked with for the past 20 years, I think that, you know, they do feel a lot of social pressure on social media, but they don't take into account and factor in how distracting the entire process is and how much it detracts from their work productivity in their life.
Now, something that surprised me was that I know there are local schools here that say that they have a firewall on the computers within school, but as the show points out, this doesn't have much effect on the kids that bring their cell phones to school. And in some of these schools, the administrators, the teachers, they have little control over how much they use them in class. So they could be scrolling through websites as the school classroom day goes on. Is this what you see, is that it's really hard to control how much usage they are using within school hours?
Oh yeah, 100%. You know, the parents don't know really what's happening at the school. And a lot of times the school doesn't know what's happening, where their kids are going. And, you know, the kids are typically a step or two ahead as new apps are coming in, and they're more techno savvy, so they can find ways around even systems that schools implement to keep them, like, especially the schools that have iPads or tablets or Chromebooks. They found a lot of ways to circumvent the protocols that are in place to keep them from going to websites. And it's not uncommon for me to hear stories about, you know, girls shopping online and guys checking out different YouTube videos in the middle of class.
Oh my gosh. And they do point out that most of the teachers, they're not even on social media, so they don't understand the way that it works. And we all know that, you know, adults use various forms of social media. So what would you say is the minimum amount of apps or social media apps that a student is using? Like Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, are there more than that?
Yeah, those are the main ones for sure. I think, you know, especially I see such a huge contingency, you know, everywhere of kids from Dana Point all the way up to Long Beach. And I think that what I hear from most of the kids is it's really a lot of, most of it is Snapchat. That's where a lot of their content and conversations and pictures and everything is going back and forth.
And then one of the students that's joined, she and her brother actually joined together, and her storyline seems to focus on, she's a young, very pretty girl with a Mexican background. And she immediately, she posted, you know, a social media profile and immediately started getting requests from the guys at school. And what shocked me was that she didn't respond to some of them, and they were writing her really nasty notes back just because she didn't respond to them. Like, you're really cute. And they got pretty aggressive with her. Is that something that you see typically, that you know, even the people that want to be on social media but just sort of want to stay under the radar, that they're almost bullied for not being more active?
Especially, you know, from a lot of the girls do receive a lot of that, and a lot of it will be, you know, it increased the ability for guys especially to take much bigger risks without worrying about rejection or failure that occurs face to face. So it's easier. And so it's enabled the boys especially to be able to come out and basically throw a net instead of fish for a single fish. So they can send the same stuff to many, 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 many different girls. And they know it's really a numbers game at that point, whatever they're looking for, whether it's, you know, to hook up with them or to get a nude pic from them. They send the same things to a number of girls, and the ones that they're particularly interested in, they do have a tendency to hound. Now, with that being said, you know, I think that something you have to factor in here is that there's also a much bigger percentage of girls that are actually sending out pictures and fishing for compliments from guys by sending out risque pictures, not necessarily nudes, but, you know, kind of sexy in a bikini type of pictures or underwear. And a lot of these are guys that they're not really interested in, but it's a way for the girls to feel better about themselves and to feel more desirable and attractive. So definitely social media has created a kind of a toxic mix between the two sexes.
It just seems like such adult matter for kids that don't even have a prefrontal cortex that's formally developed.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of these girls on top of it are really, you know, naive to what this is, what's happening, especially when they're younger. You know, we see that typically that it's the middle school girls, that 7th, 8th, and sometimes 9th graders that are the ones that are most vulnerable to the game, so to speak, where, you know, they are the ones that typically, from a percentage standpoint, release more nudes more frequently, more often. And when you vet it all out, it's just because they're naive to the game. And this is how I ended up. For 5 or 7 years, I saw so many girls that were good girls that, you know, had the birds and the bees talk with their parents, that new guys thought with the wrong head, and were still getting into all these dicey sexual situations with boys and unwanted situations. And it really forced me to start to figure out what was happening. This is how my in-home parent, my in-home private presentations for the girls got created, called Girl Guys to Guys, which is basically, it's with all the girls and their friends together in the privacy of somebody's home, which is me and them. So I can talk to them about, look, here's how you boost your self-esteem. Because a lot of times it was a self-esteem related issue. And I talked to them about how to boost their self-esteem. But the other part, and even more in part, was the game. Like, here's how you separate a legit guy from a player, because they look a lot alike. The different types of players and the different things that player 1 through 4 do. And here's how you respond and what you do if and when it comes across your radar. And here's exactly what you say and what you don't say and what you respond to if someone's trying to solicit a nude. And it's that information that the girls are really, really thirsty and hungry for. I've done probably 60 of these presentations, and they eat it up like wildfire. They just say, no one talks to us about this stuff. This is so how it is.
So overwhelming. So what's your advice to parents? I mean, beyond just like maybe watching the show so they sort of get like a little taste of what's going on, what is your best advice to someone who has maybe a middle school kid or a high school kid in terms of what they can do to help navigate this really murky, this murky's waters?
Well, like, I mean, I think that the first part is you've got to be able to open up communication lines with your kid, or, you know, it doesn't matter what you're trying to establish if you don't have those communication lines open. So, you know, your kids, especially as they start hitting adolescence, might not want a relationship with you, but they really need a relationship with you. What I mean by that is it's not convenient for them to want to spend time with you. But look, as an adult, whether you had a good childhood or bad childhood, whether your parents are dead or alive, there's a part of you as a parent that needs your parents in your life right now. It's like that times 1,000 for these kids. So, really, long story short, is you have to fight for time with your kids. And it's like, I'm a big proponent of meals, because everybody needs to eat. They're short in duration. Everybody's around you modeling appropriate behavior. And if you have a one-word utterance kid, which is, you know, how's your day? Good. What's happening? You know, not much. You know, what do you have to do today? Oh, my God, you're so annoying. And that's the extent of your conversation, which is really commonplace with adolescents. You know, what you want to do when you do get them out, you fight for time. Hey, I want to get you out to lunch. Let's go. I don't want to go to lunch. I got all this stuff. Hey, look, I'm sorry. I love you so much. Let's go. You get them out. And what you don't want to do is just start to just go, hey, so how's this? What's happening with this? Because you're good. The response is good. Find nothing. You have a really, really awkward 58 more minutes of your meal. If you just sit back, this generation is completely overstimulated. They cannot stand downtime. If you tried to remove a phone from some of these kids or a video game system, they look at you like with this wild-eyed stare, like you just pulled meat from a tiger. And so if you can teach your kids techno manners, simply just, you know, making eye contact when people are talking to you, not having your phones at the lunch table, then you can actually sit back and create 30 seconds to a couple minutes of awkward silence. And it actually it really kills the kids. They can't stand it. And a lot of the things that you're looking to hear about, they'll start to fill those empty spaces up with, because it's just so uncomfortable for them. I have a friend, and so they'll fill it up. But again, that one-on-one time is important with them. And so once you've got that established, then you can do a lot with it. Then, you know, I was watching the show and I was hearing what the professionals were saying. And, you know, in my head, I was sitting there going, well, yeah, there's some of that stuff's going to help. But really, when it's all said and done, this is teaching the kids to navigate these situations. And what they need for that is really, you know, nobody has good self-esteem. Everybody, to some extent, feels inadequate, insecure, and inferior at this stage of development. It's naturally low. So what these kids really need is they need self-esteem boosts. And parents can facilitate that, because if we look at any kid who's come through here, for the most part, who's had low self-esteem, you can trace it back to a single habit that they picked up along the way. They got negative. They started looking at what wasn't right about a single situation. And then that started to generalize into the other aspects of their life. And they started to look at what they didn't like about school, about what they didn't like about parents, what they didn't like about kids. And at a certain point, that turned into what they didn't like about themselves. As soon as that happened, their self-esteem plummets, their anxiety spikes up, and they get stuck in this perpetual cycle. So to help unwind that, what parents can do is twofold. One is, you know, I think that you hear your kid talking about, you know, that's lame, that's annoying, I hate this, I hate that. And it doesn't come from a valid source. You got to stop your kid and go, whoa, whoa, whoa. Give me one positive about that person or that situation. And legitimately, I'm not going to leave or let you go do what you want to do until you give me one legitimate positive about that person. As soon as they do that, it's an instantaneous switch and flip in how they feel internally. And the other thing is they're in the middle of identity formation, so they don't know who they are, where they're going, and what they're going to become. And so parents have a great opportunity to be able to lay the seeds for their foundation for self-esteem, which is, I highly recommend that parents spend 15 minutes writing down what they admire or appreciate about their kids on a list for the parents themselves. Not just physical features, but if you do it, it's specifics like nice eyes, but it's character, personality. You're caring, you're loving, you work hard, you're athletic. Take one off the list once a week and just drop it on them in passing. Hey, I was just thinking about how much I admire this part about you. Or I heard the kid down the street did this. I just appreciate so much that you're like this. These things go a long way to help start to plant the seeds for self-esteem and offset that negative condition. Because as these families get so busy, so much of the parent-child interaction becomes predominantly negative. It's about what's not right, what hasn't been done, what still needs to be picked up. And over time, you get conditioning with that to the point where you go and knock on your kid's door to take a knife. And they're like, what do you want? Because in their head, it's a reaction. It's not a rational thought. It's you're here and you being here means you are going to come and bug me about something. So it helps a lot being able to identify the positives. And again, your kids aren't going to let you know they appreciate this or value this. You're going to get a whatever. But inside, it gets this little burst, and that's what we're looking for. So self-esteem is the first part of that. And the second part is, you know, especially we're guilty of this definitely in Orange County, is paying attention and caring about what everybody else is doing, thinking, saying, going, and even thinking about us. And so I'm trying to constantly pull the kids out from getting stuck and sucked into this. And a lot of it comes from just the kids being able to understand the concept of, look, you need to care less. It's always going to decrease your performance to be concerned about what everybody else is doing. And this generation needs to see things to get things. And so it's good, you know, visualizations, the imagery works well. I tell the kids, look, if you're racing around the track at 200 miles an hour and you're constantly looking to see where people are and what they're doing, what happens? And they all say, I crashed. I say, exactly. This is what happens when you're concerned about what everybody else is doing. You race your best race when you're focused on yourself, plotting your next turn. And so my whole thing with the kids is teaching them how to pull out, how to care less about what everybody else says, thinks, does, especially about them. Now, I'm not talking about being callous. I'm talking about continue to be a good, caring, loving person, putting good stuff out there for people. You just start to train yourself to care less what comes back to you, whether it's positive or negative. And that's how you can start to insulate yourself from all of these things that are going on all around you, both in the virtual world and the real world.
That's terrific. My last question is, I'm a little bit worried about the kids that are in this high school, especially the ones that have befriended the adult plants. Do you think that they're going to feel betrayed when they find out that their friends were plants and they were part of this social experiment?
I don't know how they couldn't or wouldn't feel that way, to be totally honest with you. I mean, really, they're at this stage where, you know, the higher where parents are and friends are in the hierarchy gets inverted. And so it's your 100% weight and value is your friends. And so, and trust goes a long way with that. I mean, the kids police each other, similar to like being in jail in high school, where that's why the kids that tell on other kids become, quote, rats. The same thing you see in jail because trust is broken, right? So I do think that it's going to have a somewhat negative impact on these kids. And to what extent, we don't know. Everybody handles things differently. But there is a violation of trust that goes on with that for sure.
Do you think that they all had to sign a form, like everyone in the school had to sign a form in order to participate in this? Because I would think it would be pretty hard for everyone to sign off on that.
You know, I think you absolutely have to. I mean, especially when it comes to minors, what I found being in media and being just in the business, with adults, it's one thing. I don't know how they were able to clear that with the administration, with the district, with the teachers, with the parents of the kids that aren't even being featured in the show. I have no idea how they pulled that off, but I would, with my limited knowledge, I would say, yeah, I mean, they had to have these parents sign off. I think it's completely illegal to not.
Wow. So tell everybody where they can find you, because I know that they're all going to want way more information, because I know being your friend, I mean, the luxury of being friends with you is that whenever I have a parenting question, I can text you. And most of the time you write me back. But for those that are listening and they want to get more information, especially if you live in Southern California and you would be interested in something like he had mentioned, where you have him come and talk to your daughters or your sons and their group of friends, how can they find you?
Yeah, I thank you. I speak all over Orange County, both at schools to parents and kids and outside of schools, just in the community. I have a Guys Guide to Girls that I do in-home. I do have in-home private parents presentations. If anybody's interested in that, you can just email presentations@drjerrywichman.com. And someone will be able to help coordinate that for you. And I'm also very active, as most people are, on Twitter. My handle is just @drjerrywichman for both Twitter and Facebook. And that's also on my website. If you go to drjerrywichman.com, that's where my book for the teens is, How to Deal. And you can sign up for monthly updates because I like to throw out blurbs of latest trends and things that are occurring. Yeah, as well as that's where you'll be notified about the parent book when the parent book comes out.
One other thing that is great about you is that, you know, we've worked together in the past where I've, you know, when I did PR, I would get inquiries. Do you know somebody who's an expert, not only on just bullying, but you're somebody who's really knows a lot about what drugs the kids are using. So if you have concerns about your kids or you just want to be aware of what kids are using, you should go to his website and get more information because he's a great expert on that as well.
Yeah. Parents need to look out for Juul, J-U-U-L. It's the kids have been doing this. It came out a year ago, the vape pen. And the problem is a Camel cigarette has 15, 20 milligrams of nicotine. This has 50. And the kids will say everybody's doing it. Not everybody's doing it, but a lot are. And they look like USB sticks. And a lot of the kids will tell their parents it's just a USB or a portable charger, and their teachers as well. And the adults are oblivious.
Good God. How do you spell that again?
J-U-U-L.
J-U-U-L. All right, everybody look that up. That's highly disturbing. Wow, I feel like you're changing people's lives one podcast episode at a time. So thank you so much.
That's what I'm here to do. I appreciate your time, and thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, Jerry. You're the best. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara. You're going to love it. Sister Wives is a show unlike any other on TLC. If you're not familiar with the show, it follows the Brown family, including husband Cody and his wives, Mary, Janelle, Christine, and Robin. Yeah, you heard that right. He has four wives and 18 children. And they live in a cul-de-sac in where is it? It's like outside of Las Vegas. The reason for that is because 7 years ago, they were going to be prosecuted for practicing polygamy. So they had to hightail it out of Utah, and now they live in Las Vegas. So we are brought back to the show. It's been a little bit of a break. One of the kids is pregnant with a grandchild. And on this premiere episode, their daughter, McKelty, daughter of Cody and Christine. Yeah, you heard that right. Her name's McKelty, M-Y-K-E-L-T-I. She's going to get married to a gentleman named Tony. He is a Mexican who converted to Mormonism. And together they plan on having a wedding for 400 people. Number one, Steve, I can't remember. Have you ever told me this? Have you ever watched this show before?
Yeah, I will begrudgingly admit I'm very familiar with Sister Wives. My wife loves the show. I've been watching it for years in some form or fashion. It's fascinating because it's not every day that you see polygamists, let alone polygamists with that kind of hair goatee combo that Cody's got rocking. So, it does keep your interest somewhat. I think the whole thing is just bizarre and awkward, and I think they all secretly hate one another and hate their lives, but they're just so far down this rabbit hole. There's nothing they can do about it other than grin through gritted teeth.
Do you think that in this case, it's Christine's daughter's getting married? Do you think that Mary, Janelle, and Robin really want to go to this dumb wedding?
Well, I think any excuse to get out of the house is a good thing for them. So in that aspect, yes. But, you know, do they view McKelty as their own daughter? And, you know, are they going to all wear special dresses as though they're the mother of the bride? I doubt it, especially Mary, who's bitter because she only has one child. And that child is clearly not going to be marrying anyone anytime soon. So I think she just would rather go off to her bed and breakfast and forget the whole thing.
So let's start with the wedding. McKelty and Tony want to have 400 people at their wedding. They don't want to spend the average, which is like $30 a head. So they've come up with a plan to serve street tacos. They're thinking like flat grills with two people at each stand. And for those 400 people, Tony has requested that each person get up to 10 street tacos. Have you ever had 10 street tacos in one sitting?
No, but I also don't share much in common physically with Tony or the rest of his family. So, and if all 400 eat like him, then yeah, I think a ration of 10 tacos per head is probably reasonable. In any other setting, I'd say you could probably do with about a third of that order.
Now, they only knew each other for a couple months, and now they're engaged. They've asked the officiant to be the gentleman who runs the pawn shop where they first met in St. George.
Yeah, weird as hell.
Do you think that Cody was pissed off that he was not asked to officiate his own daughter's wedding?
Probably a little bit. But, you know, he's got like 15 other opportunities to do that. So it's not probably the biggest deal. I think all of them are cringing at Tony. So the least involvement that they can have in making the thing actually occur, the better. So if he doesn't have to be the one to officially wed his daughter to this cretin, then that's probably a good thing in his mind, despite the burn that his daughter didn't select him to do it and picked some bizarre pawn shop, you know, religious guy to do it.
Now, Tony is a little bit of a mystery. You're really good at assessing people. Assess for me what's going on with Tony.
There's a lot going on with Tony, and I think it all began prenatal, to be perfectly honest. Maybe there was a lack of prenatal care that affected some brain development in the womb there. Because that dude, number one, came out looking like some kind of depressed pug. He's got these weird droopy eyes, can barely enunciate words, and is constantly making awkward statements throughout the show. So I don't quite know if the guy's operating with a full deck. But at the same time, he, I think, has a decently big ego and, you know, I think is drawn to the Mormon religion for maybe the wrong reasons. You know, in Catholicism, you're only allowed to have one spouse, and he seems to be really intrigued with this aspect of Cody having multiple wives and bizarre comments to the effect.
We should point out there's a difference. Normal Mormon people do not have more than one wife.
Yeah, no,
But polygamists, the weirdos.
Yes. The FLDS versus the, you know, the LDS, that, you know, Mormons by and large are wonderful people who I've known a number of them throughout my life, and they are always the best character, hardest working, most successful people I know. So a ton of respect for the Mormon religion and the people that that come up in it. But the FLDS thing with the polygamy is just bizarre.
It is weird.
But I think he's drawn to that. So there's, and you know, let's take a step back here. First of all, you subjected me to not one, but 2 hours of watching this toad on TV. I signed up for what I thought was, you know, a normal episode, but no, this is the season premiere. So I had to deal with 2 hours of him mumbling his words, talking about tacos and wearing medium t-shirts on a quadruple XL build, you know, while talking to his Muppet brother with his shaggy hair and his semi-literate sister the whole time. So, you know, thank you for that.
All right. Well, let's go into Mary. Mary, as you mentioned, hates her life. She is pursued owning a bed and breakfast at the corner of 100 East and 100 North in Parowan, Utah, which I'm assuming has a population of 4, and there's probably a general store 25 minutes away.
Oh, prime real estate right there. You know, Mary by and large has made great decisions through her time on the show, and including being catfished by a woman. So, you know, why wouldn't Mary make a great business decision to buy a remote bed and breakfast that the only possible reason for buying would be that your great great grandparents practiced polygamy there decades ago?
And then Cody is really upset, got really upset with all the wives because they were all on board. I think all of the women were on board because they want to get Mary out of town.
Totally. Christine said yes before anything was even presented about it.
What about Robin?
Well, Robin's secret motive the entire time since she's been on the show is to become wife number one. And when you start in the 4 position, you've got to be pretty scheming to work your way up to 1. So she's trying to kind of pick them off one by one, and her sort of passive support of Mary and trying to, you know, be your confidant is nothing more than a ploy to get her as far away from the family as possible.
Now, Janelle seems to be the one that actually has some sort of fiscal capacity. Do you think that she's okay with this, or she's just so sick of her at this point?
Yeah, Janelle does have a brain in her head. She's the only one that seems to understand that, you know, for there to be money to spend on all these ridiculous decisions, that someone has to actually earn. But I think you're absolutely right. She just wants to stop dealing with the headache that is Mary and the perma cloud that she brings over the family. So it's like, oh, Mary wants that. Great. Do it. Just pacify Mary and we can go on with living our lives.
I mean, at this point, I can't imagine Mary, whose daughter is one child is grown up, that she really wants to hang out in the cul-de-sac and take care of those kids with the weird names like Truly and Kopechne and Kaopectate, right?
I think at this point, they're just picking, you know, 12 random letters and throwing them up in the air to see how they land. And that's your name, because you've gone through with 18 kids. I mean, when you're on pick number 18 for name, you're telling me you have any actual tie to that name? No, it's nothing. I had trouble naming my third and fourth. You know, you use your best names on the first two and the best middle name, so you're already 4 names down by the time you get to your third kid. What's it like when you're on kid 18?
Do you think that
start using numbers?
Do you think that Cody and Robin will have any more kids?
I could see her. How old is she?
I'm going to say like 35.
I could see her pushing for more kids, even though he's old. what she'll do is start buttering up, appealing to his, you know, his manhood and his ego, telling him how great he is and how healthy he is and how strong he is, and he'll give in.
Oh, that's really, especially since they're having grandchildren now, which is even more creepy. Now, one last question
there should be a hard line drawn in the sand. Like, if you have grandchildren, you have an obligation to stop having kids. It's unnatural that, you know, your child would be younger than your own grandchild.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, my last question is, Mary has plans to take Christine's mother with her to help her run in the bed and breakfast. Do you think that annoys Christine?
This is the biggest win for Christine of all the people in the family. So Christine gets her bored mother preoccupied with this project, and she gets Mary 3 hours away. She's like, oh, it's only 3 hours. She wants it to be like 6 hours away. She wants it to be a whole day there and back for Mary. So that, you know, again, that's one, you know, Christine can continue to climb up in the pecking order as well. I think ultimately the way it works, you've got Robin's that's ascending to number one, probably Janelle at number two, simply because she's the most stable of all those nut job women. And then third is going to be Christine with Mary, you know, who you basically treat. You know that Saturday Night Live skit where Kristen Wiig comes out with the small hands?
Yes, yes.
She's kind of like gorked out. Well, that's basically Mary at this point. You've got the three semi-normal ones, and then you've got Mary.
Oh, God. Do you think Tony and McKelty are going to have a baby quickly?
I think he might already be expecting. So there's a possibility that he delivers before the wedding even takes place.
And what is what's the baby going to be named?
I don't know. So here, Christine was talking about how they've got a financial plan, and she's really supportive, and they got their act together. What kind of financial plan could they possibly have?
Right.
They work in a pawn shop. I could see them moving in very quickly to the Brown compound, one of those multiple houses they have, and raising their, you know, alien baby there, whatever it turns out to look like, some combination of McKelty and a toad.
I actually looked at their wedding registry. I just remembered this. It was like 6 months ago, maybe. And there were a lot of board games on it. I was really surprised. There's a lot of like Risk, chess, and like Game of Thrones.
Where are they registered? Like Hobby Lobby or something?
I think like Rite Aid. I can't remember.
Yeah. Can't even step it up to Walgreens.
No. I just remember that because that's what I like to do in my spare time.
I want to bring, hopefully you still have the show DVR'd or you have access to it, because there's one part that I really want you to go back and take a close look at.
Okay.
So they end up picking the country club venue, and it's solely because of this wedding planner that's there that they've all just been drawn to for some reason. I think she is so unhappy with the fact that they selected her venue. If you go back to them sitting down at the table over lunch at that country club, and talking about the whole taco conversation, whether or not they can bring in, you know, taco stands versus the kitchen doing it. Pause it and look at her face.
Okay.
Is this the pretty one? In the world.
She was like
the pretty one with the nice hair.
I remember.
She's like, you know, I'm going to be on camera. I'm representing this country club. She's got her hair done all nice. She looks great. But pause it and look at her face as she's trying to take these people seriously. And they're talking about 400 frickin' street tacos and bringing in, you know, floating candles and piñatas and all kinds of garbage that you would never be able to get away with at any legitimate venue. And all she's thinking is, dear God, please let these people go somewhere else for their wedding. I don't want to do this. And, of course, they turn around and select the place solely because of her.
I think
you're right. The look on her face is one of just absolute desperation. She wants to be out of there so badly.
Do you think that every time they meet a young woman that Cody considers her as a new wife and the other women secretly are concerned that he might have some calling from God and choose for him to take another one?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the greatest part is that you can come out and say, oh, no, I'm not going to take any more wives. Robin's the last one. But, you know, God might come calling again. Right. You can't deny that call.
Right.
You know, I think God might present himself to Cody in some kind of flutter in the pants region.
Right. Right.
That's what he uses to make that determination.
I would like you to test drive this tonight. And like when you come home from work, say to Carlene, I've got to be honest with you. I've got a calling from God, and I think it's time that we bring in another wife. We're overwhelmed with the kids right now, and we need another wife.
She wouldn't care where the calling came from. She would love to have a sister wife. She's mentioned this to me multiple times, that she would love to have a sister. Well, she doesn't really want a sister wife. What she wants is kind of a slave. So, you know, maybe we start combing, you know, Russia for that calling from God to find someone that we can mail order here.
Right.
She's actually more of an advocate of the idea than I am. I personally have enough people in my household to manage and feed. So,
right.
One more, unless she wants to sleep in a tent in the backyard and, you know, scrounge for food herself, I'm not interested.
Well, that's great. Listen, are you going to watch the show any more this season?
Yeah, I'm sure I will. It's perverse and odd, and those are two things that are right up my alley. So, like I said at the beginning of this, I begrudgingly admit I've been a longtime watcher of Sister Wives.
Well, thank you for your service. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. I'm glad that, you know, I was able to do this analysis for you with proper long-term perspective on the Brown family. I think that means a lot.
Well, listen, one last thing I was just thinking. Why don't we do a dual family vacation and stay at the bed and breakfast in Utah and do a full report for everybody?
And just tell them we're polygamous. What we'll do is I'll say you're my second wife and Dan is my brother or something like that. And we can probably get a discount. They probably have a polygamous discount.
Oh, I bet they do. Yeah. There's like some code that you use, like polygamy.
I'll be like, look, I even brought my own homemade detergent and deodorant. So, you know, you know I'm legit.
Right. I bet we could get some sort of discount. There's not going to be much for us to do in town, but at least we could all be together.
Well, you know, it's like 2 hours from Bryanhead. So, you know, that makes it a real resort town.
Perfect. Yes. And no one's going to go on vacation with us anyway, because we have too many kids. So this might be our only option this year.
Vacation sucks. It's overrated with multiple children.
Yeah. So true. All right. Well, thank you. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated midi skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KKC for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KKC to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/KKC.
The Amazing Kate Casey.
I want to thank my great guests this week, Teddy Mellencamp, Jerry Weichman, and Steve Stoff. Reminder to go to Facebook and look for our Facebook group. It's Reality Life with Kate Casey. You can deep dive on shows. You can find other cool people. It's great stuff. You can also find my website, loveandknuckles.com. I write recaps of television shows all week long. You can find me on Twitter at Kate Casey. My Instagram is at Kate Casey CA. And I also have a Facebook page, Love and Knuckles. I also now have a list on Amazon of all my favorite books and a couple different gifts. You can go to amazon.com/KateCaseyCA, which is also my Instagram. So amazon.com/KateCaseyCA, and there are a ton of great books to read. And one of them that I highly recommend, because I want to go deep diving on it, is called Nemesis by Peter Evans. And it's a book that says, he claims that Aristotle Onassis was the one that called for RFK's assassination. So check the list out and let me know what you think. And of course, the most important thing is to remember to subscribe to the show and leave a 5-star review. I love reading all of the reviews. I so appreciate everything that you've written. And the more reviews I get, the more exposure the show gets and the more great guests. So stay tuned for next week. I'm going to have Chloe Trautman from Siesta Key. And in 2 weeks, I have an unbelievable guest. So stay tuned.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.